The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, John Creedon's book, This Boy's Heart, it's his third book, shortlisted for Biography of the Year at the Unpost Awards 2024. And the book covers not John's life in the glitter of celebrity, which he currently enjoys, I say with a smile, but rather his childhood. John, good morning and welcome.
How are you doing, Pat? It's absolutely fantastic to talk to you again. It's been a while.
It's been a while. I haven't seen you since we stalked the corridors of Montrose in Dublin.
It's younger look than I'm getting. No, we did have a brief encounter in Kinmare since, but apart from that, no, I haven't. But I hear you, and you're sounding as strong and as brilliant as ever.
Well, thank you very much, John. Ditto to yourself. Now, tell me, why did you write the book? Why did you feel compelled to share the detail of your childhood, which was not entirely easy, with the rest of us?
I kind of wear my heart in my sleeve anyway, Pat. You know, I kind of don't hold back about this or that or whatever I feel, and or about my own story. But there is no major reveal in the story, to be honest. There's nothing terrible happened to me, or I didn't do anything absolutely terrible. The genesis of the book really is, one day I was travelling back from Galway to Cork in the late summer's evening, and I must have been admiring the landscape and the cattle in the fields, and Vime Erborina Smuinte Maradera on the little byroads of thought. And I recalled a bachelor farmer to whom I was farmed out, so to speak. I was number 10 of 12 children growing up in the inner city, and between the late night shop and the nightclubs and the show bands and the pubs, and I was smoking fags aged 6 or 7, that my parents decided for my own health and safety that they needed to farm me out. So I ended up following my dog, who was also in trouble. He had issues with authority as well. So this bachelor farmer, who had the same name but not related, Johnny Creedon, took my dog and gave him a home because he was cross. He was biting postmen and Christian Brothers, and anybody in uniform was fair game to Mick. Mick was the dog's name. So Johnny volunteered to have me come down whenever I want. He said, if you're lonely for the dog, come down. You can stay with me, no problem. So I did. But coming down from Galway, I started to think about Johnny, and he wasn't an overly sentimental, sweetie kind of guy or anything like that. But all of a sudden, the penny dropped about an act of kindness that he did for me that I had never twigged growing up.
You better set the scene. You were the youngest of a football team of siblings.
Yeah, and a sub. And a sub.
Yeah, plus a sub. But you never excelled at anything, largely because you never got a chance, I suppose.
I was too young. I was the smallest everything, had everything. So I went into school. I was the youngest kid in the class. I was the youngest kid in boarding school. That's actually where the story ends, is me heading off to boarding school, full of the joys of life again. And I was a happy childhood. I had 8 sisters. They all doted on us, and 3 brothers and my, you know, mom and dad. And it was a very full house, a very loving house. There were 2 shops, hugely colourful house. We had a man next door called Louis Angelini. He had a Scottish accent, but he actually had an Italian name. And he was the bookie next door, the bookkeepers. We had a shop up front as well. And it was a huge, big, rambling house. And I think there were up to, there was 20-something people living in the house. It was 2 houses and an extension at the back. So there was mom and dad, 12 children, an aunt or 2, sometimes Teresa and Martha. There were 2 what we used to call girls working in the shop. We wouldn't call them that now. But it was a happy household. But on the side, there were a couple of bedsits that my mother always seemed to populate with the most colourful people she could find in the small ads of the Cork Examiner. So we had a guy called Joey Connors. I was just checking him on the blacklist. I was wondering, why did he end up living with us in Ireland? A New York writer. He used to chain smoke Lucky Strike cigarettes, and he used to click, 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 click away. I'd love standing there talking to Joey, and he used to write for Time Life and others. And that man, because I followed it up, my father had told me, and he was right, that Joey died on the bus going to Shannon to see Richard Nixon when he visited Ireland. And he died on the bus. And in the bedsit above him was Dr. Nuguri Ganda from Kampala, Uganda. Now, not many kids in Ireland in 60s Ireland really had such a multicultural, wild inner city childhood. We had Heji Beys, you know, the famous Turkish delight people. They're actually Armenian. They were nearby. We had Presbyterians, Baptists. I was saying to someone recently that for years there was an American family used to come into the shop who we were told were celiacs. So my mother used to order special bread in for them. And we constantly referred to them as, was one of the celiacs in to collect the bread? This used to go on all the time. I must have been 15 before I discovered that celiac is not actually a religion. I thought they were just another denomination. But so it was mad and chaotic. And I was always on the missing list. And as I was saying in the book, that on one occasion, for example, I think it was my sister Eugenie was sent out to look for me. And I was no more than 7 or 8. And she found me on a French Navy boat in the harbour. Nothing untoward. It was open to the public. But I was gone again. And can I have a go? Can I have a go? Can I have a go? I'd say you were a bit like that yourself, Pat. Can I have a go?
Well, we were free to ramble, that's for sure. I mean, rambling as a schoolboy, walking home, maybe diverting through the Dublin docks, which you wouldn't have done in later years.
And of course, your dad had a great job, so you could... That was a bragging right in school. But, you know, one of the things that kind of revealed itself to me, nothing major, I mean, a lot of the stuff I thought through anyway, was that in the search for mindfulness and peace and, you know, everyone seems, I firmly believe, rightly or wrongly, that we're all pilgrims. Everyone's trying to get home somehow. Everyone's trying to get to a place where it doesn't hurt anymore. So while we had an off-the-shelf religion handed to us, and I guess the Church of Ireland community would have had theirs and everything else, and it had a lot of merits. It had some demerits as well, I guess, and certainly corporal punishment and so on hunted a lot of us from that organisation. So a lot of people have been in free fall over the last 20 or 30 years.
John, I diverted you from the favour that Johnny Creedon did for you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I suppose I shouldn't really give it away. But when I was a kid, again, I used to bring comic books down to Johnny, and it was a real little multicolored farm. And I wanted this to emerge, maybe if I was really lucky, someday as a little film like Babe or something, because it was a cutesy farm, 3 cows, all of whom had a name, and a few of everything. So I used to bring comics down from the city, from our shop, when I was staying with Johnny, and he loved the comics too. So we'd sit there on what we called the sofa, but it was actually the backseat of a Morris Minor bolted onto a big lump of timber. And anyway, we'd be swapping notes about the comics and what's the Bash Street Kids up to and what's Terrible Dan doing? He's not Terrible Dan, he's Desperate Dan, whatever. And one day I said to Johnny, I said, are there any donkey derbies in Ireland? Because there was some English comic with a donkey derby in it. He said, oh, there are. I said, really? I said, but there's none near here, is there? Oh, there is, yeah, there is. And I said, really? And I said, could we go in for it? And he said, Ara, he says, you need to train. You're not good enough yet. He had 3 donkeys, Rosie, Deirdre, and Deirdre's foal, Philip. I ask you, right? But anyway, so he said, I'll enter your soul. He says, but you need to come down every weekend and practice like mad because you're useless. I said, I know. I knew I was useless at everything. So as it turns out, I had a golden moment and I was at this donkey derby. And as a grown man, I realized why I became a champ for once in my childhood. And I don't want to give it away now, but it really was just such a beautiful gesture. And, you know, I remember reading in some Buddhist pamphlet or something about good acts, bad acts and pure acts. And of course, a pure act is when you do someone a favor, but you never bother telling them.
Yeah.
And so it was absolutely a pure act from a man who was rough and tumble and come on, pick that pig shit out of there. Come on, will you? It was all this. And I had to run the farm on my own when Johnny was away driving a bus. So, I was like St. Patrick on Slemish Path. That's what it was like. But I loved it. And that was the genesis of the book. I just wanted to represent that story. Yeah. So what now, I did about 15 years ago when that happened was I typed up a couple of paragraphs and I thought, God, they look cute. They look nice. They're sweet. They're colourful. And I left them in the back of the laptop. And then, as you do, publishers will approach you and say, you're on the telly, you're on the radio, so I think you might sell a few books. Would you like to? No, I wouldn't. So I went off and I did. Gail were fantastic. I eventually spoke to Deirdre Nolan at Gail, and I said, I'm not happy to do anything personal, but I would do a kind of a light-hearted academic kind of amble through the place names of Ireland because I have a particular draw for those. And we did, and it sold hugely well. And then the second one I was asked to do, because in the same zone, folklore, I guess, I did the folklore anthology 2 years ago, and that won Best Irish Published Book of the Year. So they said, what would you like to do next? And I thought, I have a story, but I think it's fiction. And I tried writing it in the third person. And then I thought to myself, look, It's Cork. It's the 1960s. The context is me. So I eventually flipped it into the first person and then supported it with other scenes from my childhood. So some of them are quite disparate. There's a fairly dark encounter in a dingy pub in the city centre. And that's really how it came together. But so far, so good. I think it's brilliant.
Now, the title of the book, I find on page 105 of your book, and it's the end of your report, posted home, which used to be in those days, and my mother's frown was enough for me to know that the truth always comes out. At the end of a long list of low scores and zeros, or duck eggs, as my dad called them, was the synopsis. This boy's heart is in the right place, but he is talkative, easily distracted, and is falling behind in his work.
Something's never changed, man.
Something's never changed. That was my thought when I easily distracted, very talkative, that's for sure, but not falling behind in your work. You're actually very hardworking.
They didn't mention in the report that he suffers from Zoom anxiety because it hadn't been invented at the time. But that's what I'm going through all morning. But anyway, I have a daughter, Katie, who's my IT expert, so I'm laughing again. I suppose it's probably Briseann an Dochas mara there, ha. So the pedigree of the animal will always come to the fore. And not unlike my dad, I'm a talker. I stand there with my hands on my hips telling stories. And then there's another part of me that's actually quite shy. So, my mom and dad are probably, they continue, their DNA continues inside of me. And yeah, certainly they're all talkers. My biggest problem there, I guess, Pat, really was that I was just too young and the house was probably too busy. So I ended up at football training without my boots. So I was in trouble again. Or I remember, we learned everything. My mother was brilliant. She like gave every fiber of her being to our nourishment. I was sent off to see the Berlin Philharmonic on my own as a kind of a 9-year-old. I did violin, piano, art college, everything nonstop. My mother just wanted to suck the marrow out of life and give it to her children. Yeah. But for all of that, the backup still wasn't there. So it was like, oh, you're back from your violin class and you never brought your bow. Yeah, ma'am, sorry, you know, or whatever. So the thing was, when I see children nowadays being driven here, driven there, and it's a wonderful thing in many ways, I enjoyed the freedom of the city, but definitely academically, I fell behind. And like all these things, I often think that if you don't get addition and subtraction, you'll never get multiplication. And I just drifted out. Well, and there were 51 kids in the class and in primary school. So
it's clear to me from your childhood experience that it built in you an incredible resilience because, you know, things were not always easy. The broadcasting career that eventually was kind to you, you know, it took a while to get underway. But going back in time, I know that you have a great grow for Irish. And yet when I read some of the parts of your book where you inadvertently slip up and speak English and the punishment that is meted out, kind of a mindless punishment for just saying Cúpla Focal Os Béarla. I mean, it's shocking, really. And Joe Duffy, may remember, a few weeks back was doing, I think, a whole fortnight of corporal punishment in schools and the lasting impact it had on people. But here you are, years later, and you still love the language, in spite of what was done to you in its name.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I was talking in Galway last week. We had a fantastic night at the Town Hall Theatre. Kenny's put on a night and it was a sellout and it was just wonderful. But the same question came up. Billy Keane was asking the questions. And it might sound a bit airy-fairy, but first of all, I do have a resilience. I didn't realise that until, you know, when I discovered how, not tough I am, but how much bounce-back ability I have, was in a reality show, which was really tough going. I found it horrendous, but I kept going anyway, and I was the last man standing and won that Fawlty Towers with Brian Dowling and Jenny Zamparelli and all those some years back, and I kind of thought, whoa, I thought I'd kind of throw my hat at it and say, no, I want to go home, I'm sick of this stuff, it's nonsense, you know, but I didn't. I kind of kept going. So it's bounce back ability, and it's the same even with that brother you'll find later in the book. I'm considering forgiveness. And I have to say, and this is not St. John of the Wireless speaking, forgiveness comes very easy to me. Anyone that's hurt me over the years, really, or even now, you know, you'll get nasty stuff on social media and stuff. It does get under the radar sometimes, but more often than not, my default position is, what's wrong with this poor creator that he's screaming at me in the middle of the night, or What's wrong with, or I look back at people say maybe who wronged me, but I do bounce back very quickly by the following day. I'm hurt and sick of him, and why did he do that, or why did she do that? But the following day, I'm back to square one. And square one really is that everyone has a place in the drama, and I'm just glad it's not me. I'm glad I'm not the guy who ordered some terrible, you know, military thing or anything like that. I'm just glad that I haven't been called upon to be the lion or the tiger. Like I said it to my children one day, trying to explain what I meant. I said, look, tigers eat baby deer, right? So let's face it, they're the bad guys. So we should kill all the tigers in India. Truthfully, we should, because they're just bad news. And then if you, so I apply the same logic that there has to be snaky people out there, and there has to be people who are talkative like me. So we all have a place in the cast. So that comes up later, that even with that Christian brother, and it was a humiliation. It was a big time humiliation, because there were 1,000 kids in the primary school. There was 51 in each class, and there were four classes for second class, four classes. So there were over 1,000 in the primary school. There were 500 or 600, I'd say, in the secondary school, and there was about 200 or 300 in the tech. And we all had to stand to attention. It was 1966.
Now, John, there's so much in the book, and you make the point that it, you know, your generation is still in touch with an old world because you've got memory of it. The current generation, the millennials, the Gen Zers, have no clue as to what life was really like, and even the kind of freedoms that children had that they don't have now. And I was wondering, in terms of your own parenting, did you adopt the same laissez-faire as your parents did towards you, allowing you to grow? I mean, you were in the FCA at the age of 13, carrying a gun. I mean,
I was, yeah.
How ridiculous.
I know, absolutely bananas. And I was a big young fella. But at 13, I was actually carrying the Enfield around the place. At 15 and a half, I spent 2 months in Renmore Barracks in Galway, or 16 maybe. I think it was the summer of 75. But anyway, I'll always remember that one. But yeah, so with my own children, I'd love to think that I brought my parents' compassion to it, because they were kind. They loved us unconditionally. You could mess up so many times, and they still loved you. I mean, you knew that they were fond of you, at least, even though they might look up to heaven and go, Jesus, would you ever get sense and do your homework or whatever? So in the same way, I would be sensitive to smallies, and you wouldn't want to hurt their feelings. And I suppose one of the golden rules I lived by even back then was that, like, if the behavior was bad, it's not the child, it's the behavior. Same goes for me. If I'm tetchy or cranky, it's my behavior, it's not me. I'm behind the behavior.
Well, it's a wonderful book, and I can only endorse the words of Donal Ryan. John's memoir is a thing of beauty. I adored it. I could hear his gentle voice telling every story where Cork and Ireland ever more gorgeously described, says Donal, and so say all of us. Published by Gill Books, it's called This Boy's Heart, and its author, John Creedon, old pal. John, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks a million, Pat, and stay strong. Thanks
all
to
the
everybody.
Best. Bye-bye.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.